Our second reading comes from 2 Kings, chapter 18. We breathe a sigh of relief as we leave Ahaz and turn to Hezekiah. 2 Kings, chapter 18, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Now it came to pass in the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name also was Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places, and brake the images, and cut down the groves, and brake in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made, for unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it, and he called it Nehushtan. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. For he clave to the Lord, and departed not from following him, but kept his commandments which the Lord commanded Moses. And the Lord was with him, and he prospered whithersoever he went forth. And he rebelled against the king of Assyria, and served him not. He smote the Philistines even unto Gaza, and the borders thereof, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city. And it came to pass in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. And at the end of 3 years they took it, even in the sixth year of Hezekiah, that is the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken. And the king of Assyria did carry away Israel unto Assyria, and put them in Halah and in Habor by the river Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes, because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant, and all that Moses the servant of the Lord commanded, and would not hear them nor do them. Now, in the 14th year of King Hezekiah did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended. Return from me that which thou puttest on me, I will bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house. At that time did Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid, and gave it to the king of Assyria. And the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a great host against Jerusalem. And they went up and came to Jerusalem. And when they were come up, they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is in the highway of the Fuller's Field. And when they had called to the king, there came out to them Eliakim the son of Hilkiah, which was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph the recorder. And Rabshakeh said unto them, Speak now to Hezekiah, thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria. What confidence is this wherein thou trustest? Thou sayest, but they are but vain words. I have counsel and strength for the war. Now on whom dost thou trust, that thou rebellest against me? Now behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised, the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, on which if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, unto all that trust on him. But if ye say unto me, We trust in the Lord our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah hath taken away and hath said to Judah and Jerusalem, Ye shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem. Now therefore I pray thee, give pledges to my lord the king of Assyria, and I will deliver thee 2,000 horses if thou be able on thy part to set riders upon them. How then wilt thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants, and put thy trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Am I now come up without the Lord against this place to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. Then said Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, and Shebna, and Joach unto Rabshakeh, speak, I pray thee, to thy servants in the Syrian language, for we understand it. And talk not with us in the Jews' language in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said unto them, hath my master sent me to thy master and to thee to speak these words? Hath not he sent me to the men which sit on the wall, that they may eat their own dung and drink their own piss with you? Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language and spake, saying, hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us, and this city shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and then eat ye every man of his own vine, and drink every one, and every one of his fig tree, and drink ye every one of the waters of his cistern, until I come and take you away to a land like your own, a land of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of oil, olive, and of honey, that ye may live and not die, and hearken not unto Hezekiah when he persuadeth you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Hath any of the gods of the nations delivered at all his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and of Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim, Hena, and Iva? Have they delivered Samaria out of mine hand? Who are they among all the gods of the countries that have delivered their country out of mine hand, that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem out of mine hand? But the people held their peace and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was, saying, answer him not. Then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, which was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, the son of Asaph the recorder, to Hezekiah with their clothes rent, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. It's not a short chapter, it's a long chapter, but it's familiar ground, number one. And number two, it's all of a piece, isn't it? There's just really one large topic going on after verse 9. So up to verse 8, we hear about the reign of Hezekiah, and what a breath of fresh air it is after Ahaz in the last chapter. And so we have what we might call a fairly complete reformation under Hezekiah. Notice that one of the standards that we have been seeing as we have gone through 1 Kings, especially in 2 Kings, especially in the teens, is that we have seen that many of these kings were classed as good kings, and yet there was one thing that yet remained. They did not tear down the high places. Hezekiah does. He tears down the high places and says, worship here in this altar. Rabshakeh thinks that an insult, and so he throws it in the teeth of Hezekiah's representatives and of the people. It is actually a praise. Right? So while Rabshakeh does not understand the religion of Jehovah, the people that hear him do, and the people that hear him understand, who had often labored under kings that were not faithful, they understand the faithfulness of Hezekiah. And we see this played out, don't we, in that they obey Hezekiah and do not speak a word to Rabshakeh. They have respect for him. They honor him because he is a king like David. He organizes properly the worship of God. He sets it in its proper order and tears down not only all of the altars that Ahaz had put up in the city of Jerusalem, but he goes outside of the city to every high hill and green tree where those altars had been set up, upon which the people burned incense, and he tore those down as well. And he left instructions to all of his officers who went to tear those high places down, you will worship in Jerusalem, and the priest will burn your incense for you, and he will offer your sacrifices for you, as it says in the law of Moses. We will remember a very important principle that we see played out in the northern and in the southern kingdom. And what is that? That God takes nations away for their idolatry. Now, what feeds into that? It is often economic things. It's often geopolitical things. It's often weather events. It's often such things as that. But those things are subservient and not leading, beloved. The Lord is not interested particularly in governments for government's sake. He is interested in what the church is doing in any given nation. And if that church has been a faithful church for a long time and then apostatizes, that nation can expect judgment from the Lord. So we want to remember those things. Now, it is possible that a nation perhaps that has never had a Christian profession may not be judged for its idolatry until Christianity comes. Certainly, we've seen that over the centuries as God in his providential movements has not destroyed nations for their idolatry, but rather he's brought the gospel to them that they may come to believe in Christ. And then as those nations age and as they apostatize, then we see, don't we? We see that turning again of providential things against them for their idolatry and foul doctrine and believing and practicing the lie instead. There are nations that go through that in a cyclical way, as Israel of old did. So we want to make sure we keep these things straight. When we hear about the fall of this nation or that nation because of a, quote, civil war, or because of a drought, or because of being invaded by somebody else, or something like that, we want to remember that the Lord is interested in advancing the kingdom of Christ throughout this world. All right, so what does Hezekiah do? He advances that kingdom within Judah. And notice we see then that Judah in these next couple of chapters will be greatly protected by the Lord. Although the northern kingdom, more populous, with more people, with a bigger army, could not withstand the Assyrian army, the southern kingdom did. But it wasn't by might, and it wasn't by power. It was by the Spirit of the Lord, as we'll see, Lord willing, in the next chapter. Okay, so that takes us down through verse 8 and the reign of Hezekiah as it's described in these great terms of reformation and revival. Now we turn to verse 9, and in verse 9 we turn our attention to the northern kingdom and Hoshea up there and the last king of the northern kingdom. And so we find the destruction of Samaria, the fall of Samaria after being besieged for 3 years. I can't imagine an ancient Near Eastern city and what that city would look like after a 3-year siege. It must have been ready to just push over with a leaf. No strength, no food, no water, nothing. So then, the fall of Samaria, like we read in the last chapter, takes place, and that's put in a pretty brief compass, 9 through 12. Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed His covenant and all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and would not hear nor do. Okay, so now we shift gears in verse 13, and this takes up the rest of the passage. Well, Assyria's been feeling pretty good. They've got a lot of victories under their belt right now. Hamath, Arpad, Sepharvaim, Israel, in the northern kingdom. They've been attacking Judah around her borders, around her edges, in the south and in the north. And so now, what does Hezekiah do? Hezekiah says, I have offended. And what he means by I have offended, scholars are divided here. I think this is probably just a statement of ancient Near Eastern policy. Right? I should have made peace with you. Instead, we've resisted, and you've taken all these cities. I have offended. I shouldn't have resisted as I have done. And so what does Hezekiah do? Now, some would see this as a blight upon his reign. Others would see it as wise policy. Let's think about it for a moment together. When, during the days of Ahaz, Hezekiah took out all of the stuff and restored all that Ahaz had taken out of the city and the temple ground and put it back in there, Hezekiah is seeing this as a as a bump, like a speed bump on their pathway ahead, Hezekiah would think to himself, or would be minded to think to himself, if we're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, we say, you know, he has just restored all of those things, just built them up. And he's thinking, if I can keep Assyria out of Jerusalem for now, we can appease him now and we can rebuild later. I've just put the gold on those doors. I can take that gold off and give it to him as a present to keep him at bay for now. However, even though that may be the best that we can think, we learned that the policy was not a good policy. Because very soon after that, here they come and besiege Jerusalem. Learn this, beloved. If you give a mouse a cookie, he wants a glass of milk. If you let the camel's nose under the tent, sooner or later he's in your sleeping bag. Appeasers are almost never actually appeased. Or those who are appeased, they're never actually appeased. You've only bought yourself a little time. And so if you must use appeasement as a strategy, make sure you understand with wisdom what you're actually getting. It may be just a few moments of respite. And so don't buy just a few moments with something that may cost you dearly. Well, we do see later on in chapter 19 that Hezekiah learns his lesson, and he never offers another appeasement again, but runs directly to the Lord in that. So he can be taught, which is what we want, isn't it? Okay, so now for the sake of time, we'll just lump all together 17 through 37, and we see the proud boast of Rabshakeh. The proud boast of Rabshakeh. I want to say something here that maybe is not recognizable. We've already seen that he did not understand the religion of the Lord, yet he claimed to. And when he said, "The Lord has sent me to this city," this is what we call blasphemy. He has blasphemed against the name of God. He has ascribed to the Lord something that he did not do. He has ascribed something to the Lord that he did not do. And so he has darkened the revelation of God, God's self-revelation. That is the very definition of blasphemy. It's a violation of the third commandment, a violation of the name of God. The Lord did not send Rabshakeh, at least in the sense that Rabshakeh thinks. Did the Lord send Rabshakeh in the way that the Lord reveals in this passage? To turn the heart of the people no longer to be appeasers, but those who call upon the name of the Lord. So it's very clear here that Rabshakeh is sent by God, but not for the same reason that Rabshakeh thinks. And so while he may use those words, he believes advisedly, he's actually using them blasphemously, as we will see later. And the second way that he blasphemes God is he puts him in the same lump with the gods of Sepharvaim, Hamath, Arpad, and so on. The gods of the nations around Jerusalem. Remember that God has set his name here, and in setting his name here, the Lord has separated himself from all the other gods that are false gods, and he is the true and living God. And while Rabshakeh has gone off scot-free so far from blaspheming the name of false gods, he will not get off scot-free blaspheming the name of the true God. Well, we have to end there for the sake of time. Let's stand and call upon the Lord in the singing of psalms.